This is File 22, Cycle 3. Today's date is February 1st, 2018. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Sandy Oliver. She's going to give a very abridged business career of all the many things she's done just in Salisbury. We're not covering the other things that she did, which would take another 3 hours. But it's a wonderful story, and she's going to start with the genealogical information. First of all, what is your name?
My name is Sandra Gomez Oliver.
And what's your birth date?
March 26, 1955.
And where were you born?
I was born at Charlotte Hungerford in Torrington.
And your parents' names?
Patricia Pattengill Gomez and Francis Joseph Gomez.
And I know you have siblings.
Many siblings.
All right, can you give them in order?
Michael Francis, who passed away 10 years ago. Myself. Mark Russell. Patty Marie. Ann Florence. And Stephen Joseph. And I believe I missed Susan's middle name, which was Ann. Susan Ann.
Ann Florence.
Yes, Ann Florence.
And you gave Sue...
Yes, Susan... Susan is the first one, and that's Susan.
Does Susan have a middle name?
Ann. Yeah.
Okay. With an E?
Yes. Okay. All the Anns are with an E. Yes.
Oh, righty. Now, I'm going to start with Noble Horizons, and I want you to tell me a little bit about how you first came to Noble Horizons through CUCA field period.
Okay. So I attended CUCA College, and there was a field period requirement every year, and one of those requirements, one of those field periods were done at Noble Horizons under B.B. Winklehorn, who was the director of recreation at the time. And this was in the early 70s. And I worked under her, and then when I came back from Arizona after graduating from college the previous year, I was offered a job by Eileen Mulligan as director of recreation. So that's how I got to Noble Horizons.
And that would have been from 1978 to about 81?
I had my daughter in 1980, and I went back after I had her for a short period, and then moved on to the Gateway Adult Day Center.
What does the director of recreation do?
Well, at the time, there were only 60 residents total, and I planned excursions, I planned recreation, I planned chapel services, anything to keep them busy and,
Busy and happy.
Busy and happy, definitely. Uh-huh. And at that time, it was a very mobile, independent population.
Yes, it's changed over the years.
Dramatically.
Yes. Yes. And in 1980... One, did you become bookkeeper?
I did. After I had my daughter, I went back for as part-time bookkeeper. But then, as I said, was offered a social work position at the Adult Day Center and moved on.
Your degree from CUCA was in social work.
In social work.
But you got a master's in something else.
In 2001, I received a master's in rehabilitation counseling.
And you went back to Noble in 2001, mm-hmm. after you'd gotten your master's. And
as director of development and community relations, and then volunteers were added to that. And then a few years after that, I segued to interim director of dietary. And I'd filled in as interim social worker for a short period of time as well. So moved around.
You were a one-man band.
Yes.
Wow. What, I'm assuming development and community relations are more like PR?
Fundraising, public relations, anything to bring other age groups to the campus.
How many volunteers were you supervising? Do you remember?
At that time, I had about 117. But wow. We were very fortunate because the private schools always sent a contingency of students doing community service, and so you would oversee and train them and match them up with residents.
Oh, that's good.
We had a pen pal program with Indian Mountain School. students. We also had, you know, a number of individuals from the community who would come in on a regular basis, mm-hmm. say every Tuesday or every Wednesday. Or we had volunteers who would come and specifically help out getting people to the chapel services. So everybody found their little niche.
And it was very well received. Very well received.
Yes. Well, when I was this director of recreation much earlier, I was in charge of volunteers at that time, too. Mm-hmm. And there was this dynamite little woman from Sharon who, she just, I think she was in her 80s then, but she was a recruiter, and she was one of my best volunteers. And
wonderful.
So the program had really been very intact for all that time.
Now, when you were in the dietary department, what did you do?
Well, there was some restructuring of the department that needed to be done, and we were trying to upgrade the menus and the service because short-term rehab was becoming very popular, and people would come in for a short time, two mm-hmm. days, a week, a
yep.
month, whatever.
Yep.
And they had a higher expectation of food quality and choice.
Oh.
And so we had to get up to speed, and at the same time trying... The goal was to serve, you know, quality food at the temperature it was supposed to be served at in a timely fashion. And so mm-hmm. that was the goal, and a lot of time and energy went into finding qualified staff
yeah.
and working with staff, veteran staff who'd been there quite some time. And, you know, the change and evolution is difficult always.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I felt by the time I left there... And Lori Kilty had taken over.
Lori who?
Lori Kilty. She and her husband had run a restaurant in Canaan.
How do you spell her last name?
K-E-I-L-T-Y. And she took over when I left and was there 10 years until last year. I felt we were as good as we could be at that time.
Oh, yeah. And did you go back in 2012 to Noble?
No.
No. Okay.
I've been there because I have relatives there.
Yeah. I think we all have. I know more people in Noble than I do out in the real world. Now, I'd ask you a little bit about On the Run, and that was from about 1983 to 94.
Correct.
Why did On the Run get started?
Well, my sister was interested in opening a bakery, and I talked to her off that ledge down to retail baked goods from a fine bakery in Winstead, based on a model that was successful in Canaan. And she, at the last minute, decided not to commit to something like that. And so there I was. So I found a partner, and I was there 3 or 4 years until I bought the building next door. And
the location. Where were you first?
We were in the little, tiny, 196 square feet, adjacent to the laundromat owned mm-hmm. by Jim Vale.
Okay.
And then the building next door, which was owned by the Needhammers. They had run a retail clothing store for children called Bubbles and Bows. They were selling the building, and we purchased it and moved in there. And then expanded to do lunch. And then 12 years later, whatever, I sold it to my niece, Becky, who I think had it for 10 years.
Becky whom?
Becky Redmond, who married John Sherwood.
I had her in school.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely girl.
Yes.
What hours did you have?
5 a.m. until noon.
Ooh.
And it was strictly coffee and donuts at the beginning, and then a year after I opened, I had breakfast sandwiches. And it kind of evolved.
Mm-hmm. Like
there.
Anything.
And then there were a couple years we stayed open until 8 o'clock at night and did ice cream in the summer. And, you know, you kind of see what people want or need. So.
Were you open 7 days a week?
Yes. Always. Oh, it has always been open 7 days a week.
Wow.
In all this time. Yes.
That is arduous. That is arduous. Then you moved on in 2008 and became the director of the Housatonic Child Care Center as an interim.
Yes.
And what did you do for that? Didn't you have to get more degrees?
Yes. They were in need of an accreditation, a national accreditation, and they had been without a director for months, and it was not a field I was well versed in, but the organizational management piece I was comfortable with. So I got up to speed in that first year and obtained 33 more credits in early childhood as a postmaster's.
Mm-hmm.
And the accreditation, I'm happy to say, occurred successfully with high marks.
I've seen the certificate.
And again, it required a lot of, you're again working with veteran employees who change is difficult for, mm-hmm. but you need to update the actual physical infrastructure, and you need to update the educational background of staff and recruit board members and all kinds, and fundraising was part of that also.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, budgeting, obtaining participants for the program, and so it was very interesting, very challenging, very challenging.
When you left, who took over as director?
When I left, Kate D Z E I D Z I C was her last name.
Yeah, would you go through
she
that
was
one again?
From yeah, D E
V.
Yeah, it was D Z E I D Z I C, and I think it was Dzidak or something like that.
Okay,
but she was from Torrington, and she had run a YMCA program, and she was there probably a good three years. And then one of the employees I had hired before I left, Marcy, took over when Kate left.
Marcy who?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right.
I'll
look it up. Yeah. Backtracking to hospitality, mm-hmm. the Inn at White Hollow you ran from 1997 to 2001?
Yes. Well, I
and your background on that was.
Well, I was running the restaurant on Route 7, the Old Village Coffee Shop, which then I renamed as Fast Tracks Cafe, and there were five cabins in the back, and I was renting those out mostly to racers and AT hikers, and one of my customers, Mr. Kuhn, had asked me if I would be interested in running the White Hollow, which had four rooms.
That's all.
It's only four rooms because half of it is an office building.
I had no idea.
Yes. So okay. It was right down, literally right down the road mm-hmm. from the restaurant, and it just seemed to be a natural. Yeah, I was taking reservations
it would be.
Already, and so that's how I got involved with that.
Was it just an inn? Did you serve breakfast or?
Well, technically, it's a bed and breakfast. However, they never had anyone living on site.
That's what I thought.
Which. They were supposed to when they got their permit, but that never happened. So it was four rooms, and there was a common kitchen living area, and so I would put out a continental breakfast when there were guests.
Okay.
As my cabin guests, they came into the restaurant to eat.
Yeah,
breakfast.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense. And the Fast Track Cafe is now Mountainside?
Yes, I sold it to Mountainside Rehabilitation Center in Canaan so that they could open a transitional training program for job skills for people leaving treatment.
Now I'm going to talk about some of the independent businesses. And I know that I was so surprised when I asked you when we talked before and you said, oh, I did horses back when I was in high school.
Yes.
That surprised me. Tell me a little bit about your horse business back in 71.
I have, as I stated, a large family, and we had a Holstein dairy farm. And then as my father transitioned to different things and got out of the hands-on dairy farming, he attended a number of auctions, animal and equipment auctions, and came home with a couple horses, one for each of us older children. And so after a couple years, we were very comfortable riding and loved horses, and my brother, who's a year younger than me, he was a natural, and we decided we would turn the garage into a tack shop, and we really, at that point, were up to about 35 horses, and I was 16, and my brother was 15, and it was more than a full-time job, and it was truly self-taught. We never took a writing lesson in our life, but we were just naturals. And my brother to this day is a natural, and he's a polo player,
and
as
that's,
well, and a trainer,
that's
Mark.
Brother Mark.
And so for those, you know, two plus years, sophomore, junior, and senior, until I went to college, we had the riding stable, and we would. There were the American Horse Association had trails all over off of Wells Hill and down Wells Hill and across Route 112. And we could ride everywhere. And, of course, right down the road from us were the Berutis, and they had horses, and there used to be Gymkhana events. And it was a good time to ride and a good time to grow up on Wells Hill, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely.
So we would take trail rides with, you know, Mark in the front and me in the back or vice versa, and people in between who would sign releases saying, oh, yes, no problem. We would never do that now. But
it was different times.
It was a great time.
That's wonderful. I was so impressed with that. I really was. In 2001, you started Solutions for Seniors.
Yes.
And what's that?
I'd gotten my counseling degree, and I always loved geriatrics, and there were so many people that were calling me for information, or I had so many contacts in that field, in the services field. I thought, you know what, I should become a geriatric care manager. I had the degrees and I had the interest, and Kathy McKnight, who worked at Noble Horizons, assisted me in that process, because I've always been an advocate for seniors, always.
Good.
So that entailed going into the community. People would call me, possibly a child or a spouse, possibly living across the country, maybe here, and say, I'm worried about mom, dad, my wife, husband, mm-hmm. my next door neighbor. Would you please go and do a visit and an assessment and tell us how we can keep them more active or safer or whatever the case or concern mm-hmm. was. So I would go, and maybe more than once, and write up some sort of plan, my suggestions. Sometimes it might be they should really go to a congregate living setting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was as simple as they need more help at home, they need some rails in the bathroom, they need mm-hmm. someone to go out and garden with them. Sometimes it was simple adaptive equipment, sometimes it was much more complex. But that was what it entailed. And I was able to do that pretty much until a few years ago, because I would fit it around whatever else I was doing. And it was I still occasionally get a phone call for that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because the number is out there, you know.
Yeah. And you did a lot of private duty caregiving and hospice and all
I
that?
I have done private duty for years and years and years. Since I was in high school, actually.
Sure.
And since I had spoken to you last, I was coming up with all these names of people. It's very comfortable and very pleasant for me to be with older people and listen to their life.
It's a gift.
It's a
gift. I mean, I can work with kids, and I like the geriatrics. Mm-hmm. But I know myself, I'm better off working with kids than mm-hmm. I would be with... I mean, my husband was 34 years
right.
older than I dealt with a senior.
Right.
But I'm more comfortable with children.
Right. It's very comfortable for me. And
oh,
not
that's
everybody's
wonderful.
Cup of tea. But
no, it
fine.
Isn't. And that's why it's so great that you've done so much and are so comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Because it shows.
Mm-hmm.
It shows in your demeanor. If you really like seniors, if you really like kids, they can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more comfortable with you. They're freer,
mm-hmm.
and that makes a great deal of difference. And I won't say your last career change, but your most recent career change is opening a bed and breakfast called Sassafras.
Yes.
Now, how did that come about?
Well, about 12 years ago, we lived in a big Victorian in Lakeville, and I don't know what possessed me, but I was very involved in the chamber at that time also, and we had this six-bedroom house, and we said, why don't we do a bed and breakfast? So for a couple of years, we did get our permit for Lakeville. For a couple of years, just without advertising, because I was friends with all the hospitality people,
mm-hmm.
we just housed racers, and pretty much racers and private school parents through word of mouth. And it was around our full-time jobs. So it was pleasant. We met a lot of great people, but it was very low-key. And I've always liked food service, having had many establishments. And so it worked out on the weekends by reservation. So here we were, you know, skip ahead 12 years, and we find ourselves in a house that has 4 bedrooms and 4 baths, and we only need one. And so we said, you know what, my husband had just retired, and I was working nights, but that last job was coming to an end, and I said, why don't we get our permit and try to do a bed and breakfast here? That's how it came to be. So we're now going into our third full year, and have been very busy, have met tremendous, wonderful people, had tremendous experiences, and our clientele is much more diverse because we do advertise,
sure.
And we're in a good location on a main road.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just the setting is very conducive to guests, to having guests.
How much does either the state or the town regulate what you serve, what you have for facilities?
Well, you do have to apply to planning and zoning for a permit. And to get a P&Z permit, you do have to go through Torrington Area Health District as well as the building office. You do have to notify your neighbors by certified mail that this is what you intend to do. It is permitted in a residential zone with a special permit. You do have to register with the state, and you pay occupancy tax and that kind of thing. You are limited to what you can make because you're using your own kitchen. Now, I was interested when you were talking about being in Ireland and Scotland, and the BB&D.
BB&EM.
Yes, I'm sorry.
EM.
I was saying D when I was telling my husband about it. An evening meal, which, of course, you know, we would not be allowed to do here because that would require a separate kitchen, separate from your personal kitchen.
Yep.
So other than that, you file a business declaration at the town hall to register your name, and you have to pay personal property tax on what you use. So there is no annual inspection, though, which, in my opinion,
I'm surprised.
I'd like there to be. And also, there is not a fire marshal inspection, which I'm also surprised.
Really?
Now, you have to get specific bed and breakfast insurance because the liability is so high. And, of course, that's costly, but it's a cost of doing business.
It's cost of business, yeah.
Right. So every town is different, and it's also supposed to be owner-occupied in the town of Salisbury. Whereas I have talked to people who run B&Bs elsewhere, let's say, you know, Maine or Long Island or something, and they're doing it differently. They don't necessarily need to be owner-occupied. So.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the Salisbury Chamber of Commerce. Would you tell me a little bit about the Lakeville Merchants Association?
Well, when I was president of the Salisbury Chamber of Commerce, I did a lot of research and was given a suitcase full of material which had minutes and photos and brochures from the Lakeville Merchants Association.
Whatever did you do with that?
And I passed it along to Sarah Zarbach. And I, in looking for things later after that, I'm horrified that it might not have gotten in a safe place because it was invaluable. And the Lakeville Merchants Association was very, very active in the early 1900s and responsible for the Christmas tree lighting at the time. Now, that morphed into the Chamber of Commerce. What's interesting about this is that's the last time that Lakeville had the forefront of just about anything. And when we were changing from the Salisbury Chamber of Commerce to the Tri-State Chamber of Commerce, because in this neck of the woods, we're so close to both borders, it made sense to promote the area, build it and they'll come kind of thing. Lakeville has never regained that that viability that we were looking for. And we've been looking for it for 40 years, and then 30 years, and then 20 years, and people are still looking for it right now. We're still looking for vitality in Lakeville.
It used to be.
And it really was the hub, more so than Salisbury.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is where you had 4 grocery stores and meat markets, and you had the baseball.
It's amazing what attrition has done.
Oh, absolutely.
But, of course, when the train ran, and this was a very hot spot for tourists, and they, of course, would disembark in Lakeville, and there was a footbridge across the pond, and all these old photos, and literally glossy fold-out brochures of the lake, and you can't imagine the population that they had at that time. And also the hotels, as you know,
being town historian.
Yeah, there were so many hotels.
Yeah, and they were big.
Right. Oh, huge. Huge compared to the size of the area, yes. So, that's how I found out about and learned about the history of that. And then, as I said, I was secretary and president of the Salisbury Chamber, opened a visitor center and...
Wait a minute, you're getting ahead of me.
Oh, sorry, Salisbury.
You were secretary to Richard whom?
Richard Haskell.
And when was that? 93?
It was in the early 90s.
Okay, and then you were president.
And then I was president.
And then you were administrative assistant.
And then I was administrative assistant.
To whom?
Well,
or just in general?
No, I was not president then. So Dave Nielsen, who owned the Salisbury Garden Center, was president. And then the reins got turned over to Sarah Zarbach, became the president.
Sarah came after Dave?
Yes.
Oh, I'll get her. Okay. And the new ventures, this is where I wanted you to talk about. You started a welcome center.
Yes.
Where?
In the Academy building.
Upstairs or downstairs?
Downstairs. And we actually were open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and actually had somebody there, and we actually got our first computer, and we created our first database.
Ooh.
And some of the things that we started to host, that is when I started rotating meetings and looking for people to host them on site, on their business site, and find another business to provide refreshments, to make it more, collaborative instead of let's just come to a meeting and sit in a room.
Yeah.
And that continues to this day.
Good.
My board, along with that group, also started the Tri-State Trade Festival.
That started in 88?
In that era. Well, actually, my private enterprise started the first one, and then the chamber took over after that.
Where did the first one start?
The first one sponsored by the chamber was at the Interlaken. The first one done by my enterprise resource registry was done at the White Hart. And then we moved to the high school after that. It became very popular.
Oh, sure.
Very popular. And Hometown Holidays was the other holiday that we started in the winter to try to encourage local shopping around the holidays.
And you did something unique with a scavenger hunt.
Yes. You would get a list of things, and you'd have to go in different businesses to shop in order to find what was on this list. And
that was a very clever idea.
There were, a lot of people on the board were very creative, and there were a lot of good things. The Adopt-A-Tree came out of that as well. We figured, well, if we were going to put up trees, why not have people memorialize or honor people? We had little tags at the time to offset some of that cost. And
when did the Adopt-A-Tree program come
that
in?
That started in the same time frame. It was within that 4 years.
In the 90s then.
Mm-hmm.
Because
early 90s.
Foster and I were doing the trees. We took it over from Norm Gardner, and we were doing it in the 80s. And it was...
Oh, no, this was definitely in the 90s.
This was in the 90s. Yeah. A little bit back on the trade show, what are the participants in a trade show? I mean, do they come and talk about their business?
See, what we did was, we didn't limit it to chamber members. If we sent out an invitation to all kinds of businesses, all kinds of trades, because for two reasons. One is the professional group of the chamber at the time was very much like suit oriented, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of banks and a lot of insurance companies and that kind of thing. But the artisan population really wasn't being represented. So we felt if we had a Tri-State Trade Festival and represented all categories, tradesmen and artisans and professionals, that they'd all come together. And I can remember, I mean, there was a time when we had over 100 participants.
Wow.
And that was a lot of booths. And we took yeah. over the gym and the cafeteria and the hallway and classrooms.
Wow.
That has, you know, decreased. I think, you know, some things get old as you continue
yeah,
to do
sure.
them. And also, we started off rotating so that we were doing one in the fall and one in the spring. And then that fell by the wayside a couple of years later just because you needed to lock in the space at the high school and they had other conflicts.
Sure. So now it's only
so
in the spring.
It's in the spring. They've changed it. They've changed it around a little. Again, I think it's good to adapt things to what the population in your membership is at the time. You know, you can't always keep things the same.
Oh, no, you have to freshen them.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go on to voluntary things. When you have extra time, I don't believe you ever have any extra time. Tell me about the Northwest Connecticut Girl Scout Council.
Well, I was an avid scout as a young person. As soon as I could start at Brownies, I started and went right up through the ranks and went to Girl Scout camp every single year. And I was thrilled.
Did you become a curve bar girl?
I became a lifetime scout, but I'm not quite sure. What are you
talking about? The curve bar?
That's when
you got a certain number of badges.
Oh, I had a lot of... You mean this thing that hung down here?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I wasn't connecting that.
It's
yes,
like the Eagle Scouts
did.
Yeah,
yeah,
I thought so.
And wonderful, wonderful times in scouting and wonderful experiences and trips and you name it. And then I became a Girl Scout leader for my daughter's troop going up the ranks.
Oh, sure.
And was co-leader with Mary Ellen Baldwin, was co-leader with Bonnie DeAngelis, co-leader with Melissa Coons, different people through the years. Love Scouts, and when the Northwest Council was looking for board members, I, of course, had stayed in touch and was a leader, and I said, absolutely, love to sit on the board. So part of my job was fundraising.
Naturally.
And event planning. And
that would have been
in the mid 90s.
Yep.
And I was on for 2 years.
And then the Lions Club came along in 2002?
Yes. Well, after I had run on the ticket for selectmen, and we had gone to speak when we were campaigning, we'd gone to speak at a Lions Club meeting, and we were so impressed with the job they were doing that we thought, after this is over, we're going to join the Lions Club, and we did. And I want to say 4 years until the club disbanded. Now, Sharon had a very active Lions Club and much larger than Salisbury, and so they kind of absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And Canaan also had a club, so our group got smaller and smaller. But we did fundraising every year, and my job was to set up the raffle and make about $2,500 a year on the raffle, which we would start in the spring and then sell tickets right through the 4th of July event at the Grove and then have the drawing.
And what was the money used for?
It was given to the state. There were three organizations. One was for the blind, and we would donate a good portion of it to that for resources for the blind. And then there was a daffodil fundraiser that we did. That money went to another entity because, of course, the Lions Club deals with vision, hearing, mm-hmm. all those kinds of sensory issues. And also we contributed to the Alzheimer's Association.
When did you run for selectman?
That was in, I want to say 1999.
How did you do?
I lost by 27 votes.
Oh, dear.
But that was really okay. Because Peter got on the board.
I remember that one.
And he was on the board for 8 years.
Yeah.
And really, I wasn't unhappy. I mean, I would have done a good job if I had gotten in, but...
But you were okay with it.
I was perfectly happy, yes. You know, I wanted to do something, you know, so that was great.
Didn't you get an award from the Lions Club?
I did. I got Lion of the Year one year.
What year was that? Do you remember?
I'd like to say I do, but it could have been 2003.
Let's put down 2003. Mm-hmm. We'll go for that. And then you've been on various boards.
Yes, and you know, I was trying to come up with the dates, but I have to be honest and tell you, I can't pinpoint, you know, most of them.
That's all right.
I filled out the term for Board of Finance
for Dr. Gevalt. Okay.
So that would have been like 18 months. And that was in the 80s, without a doubt. And then in the...
Did you have your own term?
No, I didn't run after.
Oh,
no,
so you were just...
I just filled out his term, yeah. Okay. I could have run. They asked me to run, but I was so busy at the time.
Was Carl Williams chairman at the time?
Carl Williams was chairman, yes.
Okay. And then you were on ZBA.
And then I was interested in ZBA and was an alternate and then became a member. And that was, again, it had to be in the early 90s, mid-90s, because Dale Brown was still here, and he was on that committee, and Steve Victory was the chair. Of course, Steve Victory's been the chair, you know, was the chair for years and years and years.
Sue Victory?
No, Steve. Steve Victory.
I thought it was Steve.
Yeah. And they had just hired an administrator at the time for that committee, and the training for that was very, very interesting. The gentleman whose name escapes me, but who wrote the regulations for ZBA, came to talk to us on two different occasions. Very, very interesting. A lot of interesting cases.
I would think so. Now, what comprises a term? 3 years?
No, 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. So you were on for 4 years?
I was on for 4 years.
I've done so many boards. That, mm-hmm. You know, some are two, some are three,
yes,
some are four,
yes.
Some are forget it.
Right.
Okay. And SWASA?
Early on, let's see, so that would have been like, again, the late 80s, I was doing the fundraising for the ski jump. And to rebuild, or, you know, the maintenance, to upgrade, I should say, the ski jump at the time. So I was very involved in SWASA in that capacity.
Do you ski?
I used to downhill ski and cross-country ski, but I'm no good at it. I've never been good at it. My siblings, my three brothers were good at it, and I would go because I like to have fun, but I'd scream all the way down the thing, get out of the way, get out of the way, get out of the way, and then the only way I'd stop is to run into the hay bales. So...
you sound like me.
Yeah, and you know, again, I like to skate, but I'm no good at skating. I like to skate, though. I like to the music, and I like the rink, and I like camaraderie, and I love sledding. But I'm no good at any of those.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. But you can do horseback riding.
Horseback riding, I'm good at. Yes,
oh,
yes.
Marvelous! Now I know I've missed a lot, but is there anything specific that you'd like to add before we close?
Well, not that I could think of immediately, unfortunately, and I know we're coming to a close, but I think for whoever might be listening to this way down the road, that growing up in this time, in this town, on a farm, with other farms, which are now, you know, no longer, pretty much, in a time where you rode your bike everywhere, and you went out in the morning, and came home for supper at night, and everybody on your street was your surrogate parent, and you got to eat dinner at different people's houses and bring home people and get help with the chores from neighborhood children, and it was a good time to grow up in this area. And it's been the last 30 years, now my daughter is 38 this year, She grew up here, and it's been a... Although there's been a lot of change, most of it, I would say, is good. Mm-hmm. I myself would have liked to see Lakeville maintain its vitality.
But, yes, me too. Me too.
But that has been a hue and cry for decades. And I think as we become more, in my opinion, of a bedroom community, mm-hmm. to Great Barrington, Millerton,
Torrington,
kind of thing,
yeah.
We're lucky. We're lucky, you know, to have this little bubble of idyllic time. And, you know, considering what's happening in some other communities. And also, I've always loved the fact that our tax mill rate is the lowest in the
state. Oh, yes.
So that's been an added benefit. I want to thank you, Jean, for doing this because it's terrific to have all
thank
this.
Thank you so much.